Why is retaking the city of Liman important for Ukraine's counteroffensives?
City of Liman, located in Donetsk region, was the main logistic center for Russian forces in this area.
Plus, Australia announced new sanctions against Russia after it annexed areas of Ukraine last week.
The new sanctions will target 28 Russian-appointed separatist ministers and officials. Australia has joined a chorus of global condemnation of the annexations.
And later in the program, why those fleeing Russian mobilization orders may not be safe in neighboring Belarus. Today is Monday, October 3rd. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Miller. After Ukrainian forces reclaimed the city of Liman in Ukraine's east, news reports continue to emerge that Kyiv's counteroffensives are advancing rapidly. Joining us from the Ukrainian capital is Anna Chernikova. Anna, what can you share with us about the reports that are coming in about this continuous rapid advance by Ukrainian forces in the east?
We hear and we receive confirmations from the Ukrainian military in particular that Ukrainian forces managed to either destroy Russian manpower in this area or capture a lot of manpower from Russian forces in Liman. Some troops managed to escape. But again, we don't have officially confirmed numbers so far. However, previously, before the announcement of the liberation of Liman, Ukrainian official sources were saying that we are talking about 5,000 of Russian servicemen in the area. But we also hear, and this also confirmed by the Russian sources, that actually Russian forces are moving deep into the Luhansk region. So they're trying to escape from Donetsk region directly to Luhansk region. For the moment, Ukrainian forces are advancing towards the city of Svatove, which is in Donetsk region.
And going back to the city of Liman, can you kind of explain the significance of Ukraine retaking that city?
City of Liman, located in Donetsk region, was the main logistic center for Russian forces in this area, and it remains very strategic place in terms of logistics. So for the moment, Ukrainian forces basically managed to cut a lot of logistical plans of the Russian forces in the area. And I'm talking not only about Donetsk region, but also Luhansk region. So it was an extremely strategic point. I think that in terms of strategic meaning of Liman, it could be probably compared to the city of Izum itself. It just they had a little different specific meanings for the Russian forces. But anyway, for the moment, Ukrainian forces are controlling the city of Liman and also the outskirts of the city and also the region around in particular. So for the moment, we can see from the official confirmed information that Ukrainian forces actually continue their advance, not only in Donetsk region, but also in Kharkiv region, because some territory of Kharkiv region remain occupied by Russian forces. So for the past days, we get confirmations along with the liberation of Liman, or also about the liberation of such cities as Borova, which is Kharkiv region, and which is also basically located in one line, in one front line with the city of Liman.
Anna, over the weekend, the head of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant was detained by Russians. He's since been released. But do we know why the Russians held this individual?
We don't really have independent information details on that, but what we know from the, for instance, from the report from the Institute for the Study of War, that it looks pretty much that Russian forces are trying to somehow legalize the work of the nuclear power plant as a part of Rosatom.
Reporting from Kyiv, Ukraine, Anna Chernikova. Anna, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
Australia has hit Russia with a fresh round of sanctions over Moscow's claimed annexation of four regions of Ukraine. Travel restrictions and financial penalties are being imposed on Russian-backed separatists and senior officials. Phil Mercer reports campaigners are urging Austria to supply more weapons to Ukraine.
The new sanctions imposed by Australia will target 28 Russian-appointed separatist ministers and officials. The government in Canberra has said they're trying to legitimize Russia's actions in Ukraine through sham referendums and disinformation. Friday, President Vladimir Putin declared that four regions of Ukraine, including Donetsk and Luhansk, would be absorbed into Russia. Australia has joined a chorus of global condemnation of the annexations. Defence Minister Richard Marles told reporters Sunday they were illegal.
The unprovoked aggression from Russia in respect of Ukraine is such a flouting of the UN Charter of the global rules-based order, it must not be allowed to stand.
Ukrainian groups in Australia continue to urge the Canberra government to provide more military assistance to Ukraine. Australia has provided missiles and Bushmaster armoured personnel carriers. Stefan Romaniu, the co-chair of the Australian Federation of Ukrainian Organisations, says military support and sanctions send a clear message to Russia's President Putin.
What's an Australian Bushmaster going to do in Ukraine? What it's done is it's been very effective in helping to reclaim part of Ukrainian soil and taking over territory. This morning, Bushmasters are towing Russian tanks. The question of whether sanctions work or don't, he has to get a message that he is not welcome in the international community. He's toxic.
Australia has already imposed sweeping sanctions on Russian institutions and its political and military leaders, including President Putin. Russia has responded by placing Australia and other European nations, the US, Japan and South Korea, on a list of unfriendly countries. Australia has also filed with the International Court of Justice, or the ICJ, in support of a case brought by Ukraine against Russia for violating the Genocide Convention. It joins other countries, including New Zealand, Denmark and Spain. The ICJ has ordered Russia to halt its invasion of Ukraine and said it hadn't seen any evidence to support Moscow's justification for the war. Russia has failed to comply with the order. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Visit voanews.com/flashpoint for even more updates on the war throughout the day. VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wiedekuswara recently spoke with Deputy National Security Advisor for Cyber and Emerging Technology, Ann Neuberger. Patsy began their conversation by asking if the U.S. expected to see an uptick in cyber attacks in the wake of Russian President Vladimir Putin calling up more troops and threatening the use of nuclear weapons.
Throughout the conflict, beginning when Russia first did its further invasion of Ukraine, we've seen Russia use destructive cyber attacks as well as intelligence collection to advance its war mission. We saw the initial destructive attacks on satellite systems, then later on Ukrainian government systems and additional critical infrastructure systems. So one would expect that as Russia further redoubles its efforts, that will include cyber attacks as well.
Have you actually seen any indications of it starting?
It's been a consistent part of Russia's war effort in Ukraine. So it's something we expect. Do we have particular indications of an increase in that? At this time, we don't.
Are you also working in terms of strengthening their counterattack systems?
We're very focused on cybersecurity resilience systems.
And so in that sense, whether it's deterrence, defense, or counterattacks, we're hearing a lot about this volunteer hackers called the Ukrainian IT Army, right? I mean, I want to hear what your sense of how good, how successful they have been in deterring or thwarting or even stopping Russian attacks, and what kind of support is the administration providing them?
We've seen quite a bit of volunteer hacking activity with regard to Ukrainian activity to defend accounts. I don't think we have really good insights in terms of understanding what's Ukrainian government versus volunteer hacking activity. And of course, our assistance is government to government with regard to, as I mentioned earlier, some of the cybersecurity activities assisting the Ukrainian government to build and strengthen its resilience and its defense.
You mentioned earlier that you know the Russian attack has been consistent. And we also hear that there's been warnings of major Russian cyber attack on Ukrainian infrastructure, critical infrastructure, at the beginning or before the start of the war. We heard warning that's how the war is going to start. I'm not quite sure that actually did happen. And in fact, throughout the war, we haven't really heard any kind of major cyber attack that's actually crippling Ukrainian critical infrastructure. Is that the case, or are we just not hearing about it? What are your thoughts on this?
It's a good question. So first, as Russia began its further invasion of Ukraine, we did see Russia conduct a destructive attack on Ukrainian communication systems, satellite communication systems, the ground parts, as well as on Ukrainian government websites and government systems. That initial attack, the Ukrainians were able to quickly recover and bring back up those systems. The U.S. government, because there was a ripple effect across Europe from that first Russian destructive attack on communication systems, the U.S. government and the European Union called out that activity and said, this is irresponsible activity. But the Ukrainian government was able to quickly recover those websites and quickly recover from those destructive attacks, which is really a tribute to all the cybersecurity resilience and focus they put on improving the security of their systems, disconnecting their energy grid from the Russian grid, reconnecting to the European grid, and the work they had done to really harden that. So that preparedness and, frankly, that partnership between various countries assisting the Ukrainians on that work, although the Ukrainians really led that work, was key to their defense. There have been ongoing Russian cyber attacks. The Ukrainians have been very successful at, you know, catching those and really remediating, addressing them quickly so that they didn't have significant impact.
What do we know about the Russian cyber operation support? I mean, to what extent is Russia getting support from other countries? Do we see a strategic alignment in terms of cyber warfare between Russia, China, North Korea, Iran?
Russia has a very capable cyber program. And one of our focus areas, both for the U.S. and for the Europeans, have been to really improve our own preparedness, to ensure we lock our digital doors, lock our digital windows, so that we can prepare in case there are heightened Russian cyber attacks as well. So that's clearly been a focus for us on the U.S.
So the war in Ukraine is the first conflict where we see some sort of a coordination between cyber attacks and kinetic military assault. So in that sense, what are we learning about this hybrid warfare, and what are we learning about Russian capabilities in that realm?
I think we're fundamentally learning that as countries think about their national defense for crisis or conflict, the digital systems they operate in, whether they're individuals, whether they're companies, whether they're governments, need as much to be defended, and the preparation work to understand what are the most important components of your power systems, your water systems, your oil and gas pipelines, and ensuring that they're up to snuff. The cybersecurity is capable to defend against a capable adversary. And that's the core message. That doesn't happen in a moment, because these elements of critical infrastructure were digitized in many countries without necessarily considering security baked in at the beginning. And that's one of the reasons in the U.S., and with partners around the world, we're working to quickly improve the security of critical infrastructure, recognizing that it's a component of adversaries' work in crisis and conflict to either coerce a population or coerce a government by potentially destabilizing or disrupting digitized systems.
That was Anne Neuberger, the U.S. Deputy National Security Advisor for Cyber and Emerging Technology. She was speaking with VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wita-Kaswara. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. Thousands of Russians are continuing to flee Russia's military conscription, hoping to wait out the war in neighboring countries. But those who have found their way into Belarus may not be safe from Moscow. Maxim Moskokov has the details.
After Vladimir Putin announced military conscription in Russia on September 21st, thousands of Russians have fled the country, unwilling to go to the front lines. Belarus is a popular destination, but even this neighboring country is not easy to get into. Train tickets are sold out days in advance. Hotels in Belarus are running out of room, and rented apartments have become scarce, according to real estate website Realt.by. The demand has also sent hotel and rental prices skyrocketing. On top of that, Belarusian law enforcement has been tracking down Russians fleeing conscription. According to Deutsche Welle and Nasha Niva, local law enforcement officers are stopping cars with Russian license plates, keeping an eye on rental properties and checking the passports of Russian men at airports. But some experts point out that President Alexander Lukashenko has his own problems and might not be as aggressive as Moscow might hope.
I don't think Lukashenko will engage in anything more rigorous than what's already happening. I don't think they will track down and detain Russian citizens in Belarus. And I think that's because they're busy as it is. On top of that, Lukashenko has a constant law enforcement staff shortage.
Other experts point out that Russia supported Lukashenko during protests following the country's 2020 presidential elections. The elections were marred by widespread charges of fraud, and national protests were repressed by the Lukashenko regime.
After the events of 2020, Russian law enforcement officers were happy to help. There were no problems sending Belarusians back home. I expect something similar to happen now, just in reverse. But since this mobilization is happening so fast, there are certain norms that need to be met. I don't see any obstacles that would stop the Belarusian regime working with the Russian Special Service.
In the meantime, five Russian men traveling by train from St. Petersburg to Belarus were not allowed to leave Russia. One of them told the Russian independent media outlet Mediazona that he was forced to leave the train just before the Belarusian border. According to the autonews.ru website, drivers traveling from Russia to Belarus are facing difficulties crossing the border for the first time in years. Military posts have been installed at the most popular border crossings to check mail drivers. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
Ukrainian grain exports are closer to reaching pre-war levels just 2 months after Russia and Ukraine agreed to the Black Sea Grain Initiative that was brokered by the United Nations and Turkey. Ukraine's vital exports were cut off after Russia launched its war on Ukraine, and the initiative allows Ukrainian exports to flow safely again from its ports to the world. VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gongadze gained rare access to the port of Odessa and has more in this report.
This vessel is loading grain destined for Afghanistan. Ships like this have been coming to the port of Odessa weekly since August 1st, part of the Black Sea Grain Initiative to resume exports from Ukraine to the world. Russia's war on Ukraine cut vital exports such as grain, foodstuffs, and fertilizer, sending prices skyrocketing around the world. Ukrainian Minister of Infrastructure told VOA that on this day, food shipments from this port headed for Somalia, Ethiopia, and Kenya, among other countries.
The most important for us is just to increase volumes of our export. Results of August were quite optimistic. We reached almost 5 million tons. It's very similar volumes which we had before the war. So I hope that if we will continue with the same volumes.
The UN says Ukraine, one of the world's largest grain exporters, normally sends about 45 million tons of grain to the global market every year. The exports resumed after Ukraine and Russia signed an initiative brokered by the UN and Turkey on July 22nd. The deal allows exports to safely pass through the Black Sea from points in Ukraine. Ukrainian officials say the Grain Corridor Initiative helped Ukraine sustain its agricultural development and deliver much-needed food supplies to developing countries.
A lot of people suffer in the world with the shortage of the food. If European people just feel it like the price rise, but in the poor country, the people do not have what to eat at all. Ukraine return on the agriculture market, it shows that it is a signal that we are now here, that we can export our millions of tons.
Experts say Ukraine's grain exports help stabilize food prices worldwide. This ship captain says the war has greatly affected marine business. And as a Syrian, he knows how it impacts people.
It's actually this war affects for everybody, not only for the crew. It's affected, and there is nobody like to see this war, and we want to live in peace and everywhere.
The head of the major Ukrainian agricultural producer, Cornell, expressed hope that the grain corridor will continue to run as normal.
The world really needs these products. All countries have the demand for this. And we need to keep this food security balance in the world.
UN projections show that because of the Russia war in Ukraine, up to 181 million people in 41 countries could face a food crisis or even outright famine.
Ukrainian officials are asking international community to help to stop the war, for Ukraine to restart normal life and help to battle hunger in developing countries. VOA News, Miroslava Gongadze, Odessa.
Now, you may remember that last month I spoke with Patrick Sherwin, the CEO of GoSun. That's a company that provides solar-powered coolers for Ukraine Air Rescue, which is an aid organization that flies aid into Poland and the vicinity using small private aircraft to transport medical supplies as well as other materials that are in need. Now, VOA's Russian service also had the recent opportunity to speak with some of the pilots in that program. Here's their story.
About 300 private pilots from a German aid organization called Ukraine Air Rescue have been delivering aid to both civilians and soldiers in war-torn Ukraine. German pilots delivered the first, but since then, pilots from other countries, including the US, have joined the effort. So far, the team has made over 700 flights.
Today, we've delivered some aid to help Ukraine. It's an honor for me to have a chance to help, and I'll be glad to do it all again and again.
Retired airline pilot John Bone of Florida spent all of July and August flying his plane between Germany and Poland, delivering medical supplies.
There are volunteer drivers who would meet the planes, transfer the supplies to their vans, and then drive them straight through to either the hospitals in the Ukraine they were going to or to field hospitals located along the front.
The pilots have also transported dozens of Ukrainian refugees and military personnel in need of medical assistance to Germany. Pilots require certain skills to do the work.
Right now, there's about 15 fellows that have registered to fly. It's a bit challenging for them because you got to get the plane from the U.S. across the North Atlantic to Germany, so it's not for everyone to do.
U.S. entrepreneurs have also stepped up, like Patrick Sherwin, CEO of GoSun. The company has donated solar-powered refrigerators to help transport medical supplies.
They knew about our technology. We make these solar-powered refrigerators that are very easy to move and to power. They have their own integrated battery, and they can run on a wide variety of power sources.
Sherwin says the stakes are high.
I mean, ultimately, we're talking about democracy versus autocracy. We're talking about the oil regimes versus, you know, more clean tech future. We're talking about, you know, power in people's hands versus power in a few, you know. So for us, it's kind of a very philosophical endeavor to get over and to slow Russia's, to slow Putin down, to be honest, and to do the right thing for people who deserve better.
Both Sherwin and Bone say they don't plan to slow their efforts to help Ukraine and will continue flying, delivering aid and donating appliances that can make a difference. VOA Russian, Washington.
And that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay up to date with our continuing coverage, not only on Ukraine, but on news and events around the world. You can do so 24 hours a day at voanews.com, as well as on our social media platforms. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire team at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.